Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
When it comes to the NFL, we tend to think about the 32 teams and the markets they make up. 32 different helmets, 32 different team names, 32 different passionate fan bases. But out of those 32 teams, how many of them actually still play in their original markets? How many fan bases have had their hearts broken due to stadium issues, television deals, and or disagreements between owners and city leaders? Maybe you can relate to those scenarios. My team, the Tennessee Titans, didn't begin in Nashville. Instead, they began in Houston, came to Memphis, and finally landed in Nashville. But even then, there was talk a few years ago about the Titans actually moving to Oakland to fill the gap that the Raiders would make when they moved to Las Vegas. The NFL is a living, breathing creature. There are a lot of moving parts involved in this creature, and sometimes those moving parts literally make it to other cities. When I was growing up, I remembered how neat it was to know that the city of St. Louis had two teams in two different sports known as the Cardinals. The football Cardinals played in St. Louis for 28 years. They made the playoffs three times and had an overall record of 187 wins, 202 losses, and 13 ties. But due to lack of attendance, success on the field, and an older stadium, the Cardinals ended up moving to Tempe, Arizona in 1988. Today we are going to talk to a fan of the St. Louis Cardinals, and I'm going to let him introduce himself and talk about why he's a fan of those Cardinals. It is a fun interview, and there were several points I had either forgotten about or never knew about the Cardinals' time in St. Louis. If you would like to be part of this podcast, please message me at Jeremy_McFarland on Twitter or on the Facebook page of the Footballers Family. Also, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. And while you're at it, take a look at the rest of the great podcasts on the Sports History Network. Thank you and enjoy this interview. I'd like to welcome everybody back to the Footballers Family podcast, and I have a special guest that's going to talk about an interesting topic. Would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Bob Underwood, and I live in the St. Louis area and grew up as well as many thousands of other fans rooting for the St. Louis Football Cardinals in the mid-70s. So I guess I'm here to talk a little bit about the history of the Cardinals, and I am on social media. I've got a Twitter page, Big Red at STL. And there's a Facebook group with about 3,000 members and people. Someone posted a photo the other night of a Big Red basketball game at one of the local colleges, and somebody had snapped a photo of five or six players signing autographs for kids back in 1975. So it's really neat seeing that kind of those photos and videos and stories like that of a lot of fans that are around my age. Some are a little bit older that go all the way back to 1960 when the Cardinals played in St. Louis after they left Chicago and moved to St. Louis. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff and the history and sharing stories or just getting involved with these stories, do a quick search, St. Louis Football Cardinals on Twitter or Facebook. I'm the only St. Louis Football Cardinals page on any social media platform that I've seen. So, and I've been doing this for about 5 or 6 years.
Well, that's impressive. And there's probably a lot of fans that didn't know that the Cardinals played first off in Chicago and then played in St. Louis. And what I understand about that is that I think it was the Bidwells at the time. They knew they couldn't compete with the Bears. Can you tell us a little bit how they got to St. Louis?
Yeah, so there's, I get kind of disappointed. You see a lot of people talk in these football groups and about the Cardinals, St. Louis stealing the Cardinals from Chicago. The Cardinals were owned by Charlie Bidwell, and they won a championship in 1947 in Chicago. They appeared in the 1948 championship game and lost. And Charlie passed away before the 1947 season. And his wife, Violet Bidwell, she became the first professional female owner. And she took over the team and remarried a couple of years later. And in the 1950s, the Cardinals were really in the dumps. They had financial trouble. They went through a lot of head coaches, a lot of quarterbacks. And Chicago could support two football teams. But the problem was television started back in the mid to late 50s. And there was always a blackout in Chicago. So when the Bears played on the road and the Cardinals were playing at home, the Bears games couldn't be televised. So there was a big issue with the two teams playing in Chicago. The commissioner, Bert Bell, at the time, he pretty much stepped in and told George Halas of the Bears and Violet Bidwell and her husband, Walter Wolfner, for them to figure it out, that one of them had to leave. And each offered the other $500,000 to leave Chicago. And the Cardinals felt like they should be allowed to stay because they had been there since 1920. They were the older team. And the Bears, they had the fans, they had high attendance, and Halas wasn't going anywhere. So eventually some things happened. St. Louis almost landed an expansion team while the fighting was going on. The AFL came into play. They visited St. Louis in 1960, and they were planning on putting a team in St. Louis that were going to start play in the fall of 1960, the inaugural season of the AFL. And the NFL got a little nervous. So Pete Rozelle was the new commissioner, and Walter Wolfner and Violet Bidwell decided they were going to leave and move to St. Louis. And Pete Rozelle approved that in 1960. I think it was March 13th, 1960. And the Cardinals started playing that fall in St. Louis.
Now, you said you started following them in the 70s. Were you you were raised in the St. Louis area?
Yeah.
So is that why?
I was raised in the Metro East. I grew up in Illinois. Okay. You know, so probably 15 minutes from St. Louis.
Is that why you started following them?
Absolutely. I think you know, we still had I still had some friends that liked the Cowboys for whatever reason. You know, there's Cowboy fans everywhere. but we hated the Cowboys and still do. That was a big deal last night. I don't necessarily follow the Arizona Cardinals anymore, but them beating Dallas last night, really, that was a big deal, you know, for Cardinal fans. So, and the way they beat them as well. So that's how I got involved. It was probably 1974. That was a good year to start following them. They won the NFC East. They appeared in the postseason for the first time since 1948, when they appeared in the championship game back then. Don Coryell was the coach. They had all kinds of stars: Terry Metcalf, Jim Hart, Mel Gray, Jackie Smith was still on the team. You know, so that's how I got involved with rooting for the Cardinals. And you know, me and my friends all had the someone posted a photo on Twitter. You may have seen it of their Sears catalog Jim Hart jersey and football helmet, the little uniforms you could buy back in the 70s out of Sears or JCPenney. And that led to everyone, including myself. I had the jersey and the helmet. I dressed up as Jim Hart for Halloween. I think I had a broken arm, had my arm in a sling. So I posted that, and everybody else started posting photos from when they were kids back in the 70s.
So you say you don't follow the Cardinals as much anymore?
No, I mean, to be honest, you know, when they left, I was pretty much done with them, and it kind of coincided. I had just graduated high school in 1985, and I had left for the Navy. So when they actually left, I wasn't living here any longer anyway. So it still stung, but I, you know, the last couple of years they were here, I was gone. So, and I started following some other teams. Obviously, when the Rams came here, I was a big fan of the Rams. And to be honest, when the probably around 2012, 2013, when the writing was on the wall that the Rams were going to leave, and then the way they left in 2015, I watch very little football anymore. I may have the game on in the background. I don't necessarily follow it. You know, I had the game on last night a little bit, but I was doing other things. And I'm not the only one in St. Louis it's that way. We've kind of gotten burned a couple of times by some owners. And, you know, there's still a lot of fans here, but I really don't follow the NFL much anymore.
Do you see a lot of Cardinals fans in St. Louis other than the baseball team?
Yeah, there's still some. There's I would say most of them on the social media groups are from Arizona, though. They just want to know a little bit more about the history of the team. There's a really good group on the Chicago Cardinals as well. If you can get that guy on your podcast, he could go through, you know, when the team started in 1920 and, you know, so that would be.
I think our mothership has gotten him on there, and his name slipped my mind, but I'm looking, I would like to get that as well. But one thing I would like to know is I do believe that football becomes family. I mean, when you go to a game, you're around people you don't know, yet you're still rooting for the same team. And yep. You had two teams basically taken from you. What was St. Louis like during those times?
You know, it's interesting. I think it was a little bit different when the Cardinals left. You know, when they had a really good season in 1984, and when I say a really good season, they were 9-7.
You know, but for the Titans, you know, I understand.
But they had a chance. If they won the last game, they could have won the division and gone into the playoffs, and they were as hot as anybody at the end of the season. So that was a big miss. And then, you know, Jimmy the Greek predicted them to go to the Super Bowl in 1985 before the season started, and they started off 3-1, and it just went downhill from there. The team had some drug problems. There was lack of leadership. They were started 3-1. They finished 5-11, and I think they lost their first five or six games in 86. Finished 4-11 and 1. And during this time, you know, Bill Bidwell was trying to get a new stadium, a taxpayer funded stadium in the city. And I still read a lot of articles from that era. The media, the sports columnists, they were openly criticizing Bidwell and making fun of him and Neil Lomax. And it was just a very strange time. And I think a lot of fans follow that. And I think, you know, they left in 1987. And I think most, I don't know if I'm going to say most, but a large number of fans felt like, let them go, we'll get an expansion team with local ownership. You know, that didn't happen. Came very close. But politics, really, ultimately politics led to the Cardinals leaving. But I think if we had better ownership, I think there would have been more support, fan support, and pressure to keep the team here. With the Rams, they just left for greener pastures. And they were a bad team, too, after the greatest show on turf. I don't think they had made the playoffs since 04. Maybe it was 06. But they went through a three-year stretch where they won five games. You know, in 15 games over like a five-year stretch. And that's tough to overcome. They hired Jeff Fisher, and they were kind of like the Titans. They had a few seasons where they were 7-9, 8-8 one year, you know, so they were very mediocre. But, you know, once Stan Kroenke took over the team, you know, he didn't talk to the media. It was just very quiet, you know, and the general manager, he kept promising they weren't going to leave, you know, but, ultimately they did, and they kind of trashed the city on the way out as well. So it really left a sour taste on a lot of people's mouths.
Well, that's one thing about, a team leaving. We had about 2 years ago, we had the Titans talk about moving to Oakland about 3 years ago. Huh. And I never experienced that. You don't want to say that you get attached to a team because it's just a team, but you do. You do. It becomes part of who you are. So it's got to feel like that's part of your life being taken from you. Just that, you know, a little bit of that part. So tell me some memories. I've got some things here that from 1960 to 1987. One thing I didn't know is one of my favorite people of all time, Gene Stallings, was a coach here. I did not know that.
He was. He started in 1986. He got up to a really bad start. The very first game, there was a controversial play call at the end of the game where they ran the ball on fourth down and goal with 15 seconds left in the game. And they got the first down, but they didn't score, and they couldn't stop the clock. And I'm pretty sure he admitted later that he thought the clock stopped after they got the first down, like it does in college.
Oh.
And they ended up losing the game 16-10 to the Rams. And the season kind of went downhill from there. They started 0-5 or 0-6. And I think they won four games. Two of them were against Tampa Bay, who were they may have been worse than the Cardinals. You know, so it was a really tough season. 87, they came back pretty strong. You know, they were kind of a lame duck team. Bill Bidwell hadn't announced that they were going to relocate yet. But I think everybody kind of knew that they weren't going to be around in St. Louis, and the attendance was very bad. It wasn't great in 86 either, mainly because of the product. But they had a pretty good team. Lomax bounced back, had a good year. Stallings had the first year in Phoenix, had a very, very good year until Lomax got hurt. I think they were probably playoff bound. They beat the 49ers, who I think won the Super Bowl that year, or they were at least in the Super Bowl or in the championship game. They beat them on a Monday night, I believe. I didn't follow them that closely, but, I felt bad for Gene because he came into a situation after the 85 season and they just didn't have a lot of talent. You know, Lomax was coming off a bad year and it continued in 86. And they ended up trading O.J. Anderson after 4 or 5 weeks in the 86 season. And there were accusations of Gene Stallings being racist and that the players wanted out of St. Louis, which O.J. later took back. You know, I think he was just hurt that he was traded. But it was a rough first season for Gene Stallings, that's for sure.
Well, that's if anybody knows Gene Stallings, that's not who he is. He's a pretty decent guy. Now, what I found out, and I didn't know this, is that they had to have permission from the baseball Cardinals to use the Cardinals name. Is there anything behind that?
I don't know if there's any, and I've done a lot of research on the relocation. I don't recall seeing that. I do know that there was talk of the football team changing their name just because of confusion, you know, with the baseball Cardinals already being here. I do remember seeing a quote from Bill Bidwell that, you know, they were already kind of called the Big Red in Chicago and they would just kind of go by that. So if you read the papers, you know, you would see the Cardinals referred to as Big Red or Grid Birds or Grid Cards or something like that, you know, just to minimize confusion. But no, I hadn't heard that they needed to get permission from the baseball team.
Again, I have found out in my research on these with these teams that the internet is not always right.
Yeah, it depends where you get your information.
Well, the thing is, you can dig deep. I try not to go to Wikipedia as my first and primary source, mainly because I don't trust Wikipedia very much. But I did find out the Gridbirds. I love that name. Mm-hmm. I love that name. Do you know the background behind that?
No, I just think it was probably something that we had two newspapers in town back then, and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, they're still around, and the St. Louis Globe-Democrat. And if you go back and read some of those early game stories and things like that, I think it was just a way of them referring to the football team. I think it was something the media kind of made up, and kind of like the Big Red, you know, probably it started in Chicago and it kind of carried over. But I don't know who coined that phrase. I think it was just something to use to differentiate between the football and the baseball teams.
Now that's neat. When I think of Big Red, I think of the gum, and I don't think that that's what I'd want my team known as.
Now, or Nebraska football, you know, they're known as Big Red also.
Well, Nebraska. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. What are some of your memories, some of your special memories about the Cardinals being there?
You know, unfortunately, back in the late 70s, and they were on TV most of the time during the Cardiac Cards era, but the NFL had this archaic rule, blackout rule, where you had to be sold out 72 hours before the game. So, you know, I remember reading the paper, you know, there was no internet back then. So you'd read the papers like, okay, how many tickets are left, you know, before noon on Thursday? And usually a local TV station, CBS, I think they had the games back then. If there were 2,000 or 3,000 tickets left, they would buy them and hand them out just so the game could be televised locally. But once Don Coryell left, there were some pretty lean years and there were a lot of home games. You know, the Dallas game was always televised. They would sell out. But a lot of the home games weren't. So I just remember me and a lot of my friends would listen to the Cardinals on the radio, and they had some great radio broadcasters. And we'd go out and play out in the yard with the game on real loud, you know, so we could listen to the game. And those are my earliest memories of listening to games on the radio. And then sometimes even when they were on TV, I think we only had one TV in the house, you know, so my dad would be watching a Western or something. So I was still listening to the game on the radio.
It's something about the radio that's much better than the television.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Got a couple names I want to throw out to you here.
Sure.
Larry Wilson. What's the first thing you think of when you think hear the name Larry Wilson?
Just tough. You know, the guy, pound for pound, there was nobody tougher, maybe in the history of the game. You know, he was 5'10", maybe at the most. Didn't even weigh 200 pounds, you know, probably 180 pounds. He would get run over at times, but, you know, he would remember and he'd pay these guys back. You know, he was, a lot of people say he was the inventor of the safety blitz. The Cardinals actually had a defensive coordinator that kind of came up with the safety blitz. And once they got Larry Wilson, I think in 1961, they started using that blitz. And he just ran it to perfection. Even if he didn't get the quarterback sack, he was in the backfield just creating havoc on the quarterback. So forcing turnovers. You know, he just passed away a few weeks ago.
Yes, he did.
And so I can't remember his age now, early 80s, I guess. And they actually had the funeral here in St. Louis. Probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I can't say he was my all-time favorite Cardinal because I never saw him play, but I've seen a lot of video, the famous video of him intercepting a pass with two broken hands. You know, he had casts on both hands.
Yes.
Intercepted a pass in 1965 and returned it, you know, down to the 2 or 3 yard line, which led to the winning touchdown. You know, just a lot of stories like that that are unbelievable.
Did you... And I think he had no teeth too. So he pretty much was.
Yeah. He lost his teeth pretty early. And if you see some photos, if you just do a search on the internet, you'll see a lot of times where you can tell he doesn't have any teeth in his mouth when he played.
I actually, of all things, I found one of his cards at a card show and had to buy it because he was grinning.
Yeah.
He had nothing there. But if I read it correctly, he was the general manager at one point.
He was, you know, that was one of the things with the Cardinals is, you know, Bill Bidwell is much maligned here for being a poor owner. And he was, by all accounts, though, there was a great guy, very charitable, you know, but as far as running the football team, when he took over the team from his brother, him and his brother, Stormy, they were co-owners and he bought him out in 1972. Yeah, but before that, Bill was, he was the one signing contracts with the players. And he hired a guy named Joe Sullivan who he started doing the contracts in the early 70s all the way up to the end of the mid 80s or so, early 80s. But Larry Wilson was director of player personnel. I think he helped with a draft for a little while when he first started. But the Cardinals never really had a true general manager until 1988. I guess it was 88 that one of the first things Bidwell did when they moved to Phoenix was hire Larry Wilson as the general manager. So that was the first general manager that the Cardinals ever had. So they never really had one while they were in St. Louis. Well, they never had a football guy.
They picked a good one with that. Don Coryell.
Don Coryell.
Impression?
You know, just really an offensive genius. He came to St. Louis in 1973. I think his record in college at San Diego State was like 100 wins and 15 losses or something crazy like that. He became the first coach to win 100 games in college and the pros. But, you know, the Cardinals had two consecutive 4-9-1 seasons. And his first year in 1973, they still finished 4-9-1, but they moved the ball up and down the field. They still made a lot of mistakes, but you could tell it was a different team. And then in 74, they win 11 games, come out of nowhere and win the division and make the playoffs. Same thing in 75. 76, they were 10-4. They did not make the playoffs, which was very disheartening. And then 77, they were 7-3 going into Thanksgiving against Miami, and they just got blown out. Bob Greasy threw 6 touchdown passes. They lost their last 4 games, and that was the end of the Coryell era. But, you know, there's a lot of misperceptions about Coryell, and I had a discussion on the Facebook group the other day. He's kind of known as Air Coryell, running the Air Coryell offense. But with the Cardinals, they didn't throw much more than 20 passes a game. It was completely different than in San Diego. You know, they were known as the Cardiac Cards in St. Louis, and they ran the ball. In 1975, Jim Otis led the NFC in rushing. I don't even know if you remember who Jim Otis is, but
no.
You know, he was their fullback. He wasn't even Terry Metcalf. You know? So he led
he knew his team and he knew the talent that he had on that he was more able to run the ball with St. Louis compared to my mind went blank, the quarter Dan Fouts over in San Diego.
Yeah. Now they didn't throw often, you know, but man, they had some big plays. Mel Gray was as good as anyone. Oh, yeah. Again, pound for pound, he may have been the best wide receiver in the league in the 1970s. You know, I read a stat the other day. I was watching a video from like halfway through the 74 season, or maybe it was the 75 season, and half of their passing touchdowns had gone for 40 or more yards. And, you know, Mel Gray averaged almost 20 yards a catch his entire career.
Good gracious. So
they had some big play. Jim Hart had a big arm. They had some big play wide receivers. Ike Harris showed up later in the 70s. And I'm losing my train. Earl Thomas. I almost called him Dwayne Thomas, which is his brother. Earl Thomas in 74 and 75 had some big years. So it was a great offense. They didn't throw every down like San Diego, but he was just a genius with his play calling.
So if I gave you a piece of granite and a chisel and said, make your Mount Rushmore of St. Louis Cardinals, who would they be? Who would be your
You'd have to start with Larry Wilson. And so Mount Rushmore, is that four or five?
They were going to make five, but it just didn't work out. So we're going to go with how many you can put up on there.
Well, I would go with the four Hall of Famers and Jim Hart. That's who I would go with. OJ Anderson would be very close as well. He's right there with Jim Hart, I think. I wrote a blog last year or the year before, and it was this past year because it was the NFL 100th season or whatever. So a lot of teams were ranking their top 100 players, and the NFL did that. And I ranked the top 100 St. Louis Cardinals, and it was the four Hall of Famers. And then I actually had OJ Anderson fifth and Jim Hart sixth. But they're right there. You know, they both have, they're both borderline Hall of Famers. I mean, Jim Hart would be in the Hall of Fame if he had some postseason success. You know, he had two postseasons where they lost both games. And OJ is the same way. OJ obviously did have postseason success. So I think he's very close to being a Hall of Famer as well. But I would go with Larry Wilson, number one, Jackie Smith. The next three you can rank, Jackie Smith, Roger Worley, Dan Dierdorf, you know, and then Jim Hart. That would probably be my top five with OJ right there.
Dan Dierdorf, that was, I think if I remember correctly, he went to Michigan, didn't he?
He did. And he's from Canton, Ohio. He didn't grew up in Canton, Ohio.
He didn't. But I remember him holding out his hands. Of course, his fingers are huge and misshapen. But he had on one finger, he had his college Hall of Fame ring. And on his other, he had his pro Hall of Fame ring. Yeah. I'm wondering if he's one of the few that have both. I don't know.
College Hall of Fame and Pro Football, and
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, I'm sure there's more. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
I think something special for him to be one of your fellas and have that honor for both of them. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to leave us with something, Mr. Bob, what little bit of trivia can you lead us with? Think about something that would be a good way to say, remember the St. Louis Cardinals.
Should have emailed me that ahead of time.
See, this is why I want people on the edge of their seats.
Yeah. Trivia.
What stadium did they play in before they played at the Busch Stadium?
Okay, so all the two stadiums they played in were called Busch Stadium.
Okay.
I still refer to the first one as Old Sportsman's Park. Again, it's kind of like Gridbirds. It's just a way to differentiate between the Busch Stadium that we know. You know, of course, the real young fans don't remember the second Busch Stadium either. You know, they know the new one, but it was Old Sportsman's Park. It was renamed Busch Stadium in the 1950s, I think, when Gussie Busch bought the stadium.
Okay.
And that's where the baseball Cardinals played. You know, there's some interesting things. You had mentioned, I thought you were going a different direction when you talked about the baseball team giving permission for the Cardinals to be named Cardinals, but they did have to share Busch Stadium. Not only the first, the Old Sportsman's Park, but the second second Busch Stadium. There were times where the football team would be out there practicing at the same time as the baseball team, and just some very strange at the baseball practice went long. The football team couldn't get out there, you know, so there was there were a lot of problems. But one neat little thing of trivia is when they came to St. Louis, before they built Busch Stadium 2, they would have to start their first, other than their first season, they were allowed to play their second game at home. But after that, they would start their first four games of every season on the road because the baseball team didn't want the field tore up from football games. And in 1964, the Cardinals were in the World Series against the Yankees, and the football Cardinals had to reschedule their first home game, which would have been week five, to Baltimore to play the Colts because the Cardinals were playing a World Series game. So they actually played their first five games on the road in 1964.
That's the problem with all the dual use stadiums, that I guess the baseball team is considered the primary tenant, wouldn't you think?
They were in St. Louis for sure. You know, it was called Busch Stadium. The Busch family owned the baseball team.
Well, there you go.
So, and that's part of the reason, you know, that that Bill Bidwell, he always felt like he was playing second fiddle to the baseball team here. And he was to an extent. But, you know, when they were winning in the 1970s, the baseball team wasn't very good. And the Big Red owned the city then. You know, a lot of the problems Bill brought upon himself. You know, he wasn't very good with PR. Didn't like to give interviews. He was kind of socially awkward and didn't get along with the politicians and the big businessmen in St. Louis. And ultimately, when it came time when he wanted a new stadium and they weren't winning, you know, the politicians basically told him to take a hike. They thought we'd be better off with an expansion team, you know, in 5 years.
Well, they got a pretty good stadium now there in Arizona.
They absolutely do.
I believe it's in Glendale, isn't it?
Yep.
We went to St. Louis. My family and I went to St. Louis about 2 years ago, and we drove by the Edward Jones Dome.
Yep.
And I watched something recently that said that stadium was basically made to fail. It is pitiful.
I don't know if it was made to fail, but when they built it, the design was already 10 years old.
You know? Oh, okay.
So, you know, 5 to 10 years into the stadium, you know, it was already outdated. You know, as a fan, you know, it was always kind of dark there and the fans kind of ripped on it. And but nobody was complaining when Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk were here. You know, nobody complained about the dome those 3-4 years, you know, when they went to 2 Super Bowls and won a Super Bowl. But when they were winning, you know, one game a year, 3 games, you know, it was everybody else's fault. The stadium was no good, you know. I always had a good time there. And I tell you what, I go to the Army-Navy games quite often in Philadelphia at their new stadium. I don't know how new it is, but, you know, the dome, they had nice wide concourses. And you go to Philadelphia and the concourses are so narrow. You know, it's a new stadium. You're walking in between people in line to get refreshments and things like that. So I never really had a problem with the dome myself, other than it was just kind of dark and dreary in there.
Well, you know, winning solves a lot of things, but
yeah.
I'll tell you this, even if you don't follow football, you have your cards and you have your blues.
Yeah.
I bet you're happy.
Yeah, we had the Battle Hawks for a few weeks in the XFL this year.
You did. Well, that's one thing about having a city like St. Louis. You have a lot to do. And I appreciate you, Mr. Bob, for coming on the Football's Family podcast. And, again, where can we follow you on Twitter?
I mean, the easiest thing is just to do a search for St. Louis Football Cardinals. And my site will pop up. I think it's Big Red at ST or Big Red underscore STL is the Twitter handle. And then there's a Facebook group. I've got a blog. Again, just type in St. Louis Football Cardinals and Google, and all these sites will pop up. So even YouTube, I got all kinds of videos on YouTube.
Now that I will find. I love me some YouTube. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having me.
And thank y'all for listening to Football is Family podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser-known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.